We're still on our elaborate clues streak. 2 weeks ago, John Doe left elaborate puzzles to make a vague point about morality. Last week, the Founding Fathers laid an obtuse trail to keep their cool stuff away from the British. And this week, a serial killer sets up murder puzzles just to be a dick. It's The Bone Collector, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Yes, this is the number one movie in America. Now firmly in the year 2021. My name's Sean Collier. I am here with Diane Kruger, smiling politely, and Justin Bartha, quipping.
Hello.
Hi. That's dumb.
Yeah, National Treasure. This was one of those where a lot of people hopped on the Facebook and the Twitter to go, "Oh, I love it."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Okay, sure."
Yeah, yeah. Like it's a likable movie that isn't actually good.
But I can see where, you know, people would fall into that. Oh, yeah, they find it to be a national treasure to themselves or whatnot.
Was it 2004? Is that when mm-hmm. it came out?
I think so.
2004. So, like, you know, you kind of spontaneously went out and got dinner at, I'm going to say, Bravo Italian Kitchen. And, you know, then you went shopping for Christmas presents, but ended up getting yourself something mm-hmm. cool. Maybe a new iPod, one of the big blocky kinds.
Yes.
And and then you were like, let's keep the evening going. And you went to National Treasure and you had a lovely winter evening. And you yeah. remember that fondly.
Yeah. Although it's very rare that I've ever just like showed up at a movie theater, like just see what's playing. I always had a plan.
Oh, I used to do that all the time.
I don't know.
I'm just like, what's next? What's next that I can tolerate?
My old roommate and I used to go and see a movie and then we'd sneak into another movie after that movie was done.
Theater hopping, yes. They called it. And for all they were like, don't that, you're stealing, that's going to kill movie theaters. Hey, as long as you bought the popcorn.
Right.
Like fundamentally, right. It did not matter to that movie theater.
Exactly.
What you did not see. Movie theaters, may we be in them sometime this year. That'd be fun. I wonder if I'm going to have, I'm so used to like poring over the list of all of the drive-ins, which are obviously very limited in time, mostly showing the same thing, and being like, here's the two or three things I might be willing to see this week. If movie theaters do really come back for real, am I going to just be overwhelmed by choice?
Yes. You're not going to know what to do with yourself.
We're all going to be overwhelmed. If life does come back, it's going to be a solid year. It's like this week, the first week of January, you know how you always feel a little off kilter? 2022 yeah. is going to be the first week of January for a year.
Right. Like, oh, like just like you were just so right. saying that like you were out of the house for 3 hours today and now you're exhausted. Like that's like yeah. been my experience throughout this whole thing. Like I drove the other day for like 20 minutes and I came back just like, oh my God.
Like I have a relatively short list of things to do today. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be in the headspace. Like you don't understand. I left the house at, I don't know, 9 and got back at 11:45. Awful. Terrible. How can I handle it?
No, day is done.
Well, my therapist says that you can allow yourself to take breaks when you need them, even if you don't think you should need them.
Aww. Oh, I like the therapist. Nice.
Okay, great. We'll record tomorrow. Bye, everyone. No, this is fine. This is the fun part of yes. things I have to do. National Treasure, before we move on, that final score was 67 2/3. It is 27th in our overall rankings, which seems fine. Just above the Talladega Nights and Sneakers tie at 67 1/3. Sorry, sneakerheads. Yes, we thought that National Treasure was a third of a point better, coming in just below Ready Player One at 68 2/3.
Don't,
so like the high
us.
Middle. Sure. That seems fine. That seems a fine place for National Treasure. And we move on. You know, we stopped talking about Tony for a while.
We did.
And then he said,
I have a message for you.
Just
from Tony?
My powers.
Right. Tony needs us to solve a mystery. Clearly, he is training us for, like, is someone going to get murdered is my concern.
Or does somebody have him trapped somewhere? Is he kidnapped?
Oh, my gosh. We have to save Tony Goldwyn.
And we're the only three people on this earth who could possibly do that.
Remember that I said this. The first clue is the title of the movie we draw at the end of the episode. That's all right. The message.
Okay.
We'll decode it at that time. But really, we can even go back to Home Alone, because Home Alone doesn't have puzzles, but it has very involved traps.
Yes.
Right.
And there's just been a lot of setup over the last month of this podcast, including in this movie. Like, clearly he does a whole murder, which may or may not involve an elaborate death in and of itself. And then he goes, okay, did the murder. Now I make the clue pile nearby. Right.
It's so much work. I don't understand. Like, and then it's not for a big enough payoff. I mean,
yeah.
It's not really.
Well, let's do the plot summary. And can I also just say to the world, you should know this. If you've never listened to this show before, we just spoil everything. This is right. A spoiler-full show. But I say that because I got spoiled by my dear husband, Colin Diedrich, who I put on the movie and he says, didn't we just watch this? And I said, no, you just watched it.
Did he?
I said, I feel like I should give this an actual watch. I've never seen it before, and let you finish it by yourself. Okay. And then a few minutes later, the killer appears on screen and Colin goes, well, that's the killer. And I was so mad. It was one of those things where he clearly felt horrible. And then I realized that I had spoiled Camila about Wonder Woman, and it was karmic payback.
Like immediate.
Yes, exactly. So I felt a little better, but I also think that I liked this movie significantly less because I knew who did it. Mm-hmm. I still don't think I would like it in the end, but there are spoilers. Here's the plot summary.
And also, speaking of husband, like Dan called it like right in the beginning. He's like, he's the killer. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Well done.
Yeah. And he didn't even stick around to finish watching it.
I had to. Well, let's do this. I was going to say, Mary Beth is constantly doing that, but on the lowest stakes thing imaginable, which is where setups are going on episodes of Friends. Like, she can't resist going, Joey wasn't trying to protect Ross. He was trying to protect his sandwich. And I'm like, what? Why couldn't you just have let me discover that literally 6 minutes from now?
That's adorable.
Anyway, yeah, I'll tell you my journey with who I thought it was. After this 60-second recap, here's Camila Adams to try to collect these bones. What's that?
I said I'm kind of unprepared, but okay.
Oh, good.
So here is a slightly underprepared Camila Adams with a 60-second recap. And go.
Lincoln is a quadriplegic detective who was hurt in the line of duty. Because he has such a big brain, he's still on the police payroll. Amelia is a beat cop who just happens to have a gift for forensics, but not the stomach. Lincoln needs Amelia to be his legs as they hunt a serial killer. They meet just as Lincoln is planning his final transition into the afterlife. The killer leaves clues. After the third murder, they realize that he's copying a murderer from the turn of the century called the Bone Collector. The killer is some guy who's mad about an expert opinion that Lincoln wrote about him that sent him to prison for evidence tampering. He just wants to kill Lincoln. He does a lot to do that, and Lincoln bites his throat out. Amelia and Lincoln have a Christmas party.
They do.
Yeah.
The Bone Collector is a Christmas movie.
Confirmed. It all leads up to Christmas. Christmas, this is one where it was the point. The point is, if you stop the murderer, you can have a nice Christmas and not commit physician-assisted suicide. It's nice.
Yes.
Yeah, my journey was, I wrote down, if it's Bobby Cannavale, -5 points. Bobby Cannavale appears for a second as Angelina Jolie's neglected boyfriend.
Union County's own. The second greatest actor to come out of Union County after Meryl Streep.
Ooh.
I know this because I am also from Union County, by the way. Born in the same hospital as Meryl Streep. Nice. No big deal.
Look at you. Ooh.
Yeah, Bobby Cannavale is there, which I didn't know he was a thing in 1999.
He just barely was. I always talk about, like, because he's from Union City, the Star Ledger was obsessed with him. Aww. Like, every time he did anything, it was like, Jersey's boy, Bobby Cannavale has one episode of The Sopranos.
So he's like Jersey's David Conrad. or yes. Joe Manganiello.
Yes, exactly like that. Exactly like that.
Which I like Bobby.
Me too.
Oh, I like him. See, it's because I know who he is that I was like, surely he can't be in this movie just for this one scene. Is he doing these murders to get his girlfriend's attention?
That would have been because a good movie.
I believe in my heart that they actively cast this movie to throw you off the scent with the whole Murder, She Wrote, the famous guest star did it, right? Like, Ed O'Neill has no reason to be in this movie, except for and Ed O'Neill, and then they have him look suspicious in one scene, and it's like, oh, you're supposed to think he did it right then.
Well, I thought it was his doctor or his doctor friend that was going to, like, help him with the assisted suicide.
Oh, the guy who was going to help him kill himself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never thought any of these things because Colin told me right away who did it.
Right, exactly.
You weren't able to go on that journey.
Right.
I thought it was Bobby because, like, my brain wouldn't accept that, like, a normal character was like, hey, what's even going on in this relationship?
Right.
And complain about how it wasn't enough. It's like, sir, you are having sex with Angelina Jolie in 1999. You shut up and deal with whatever.
Exactly.
Like, my brain went, well, clearly he's a psychopath then. If he's even bringing up this conversation, it's going to be him later. I wrote, if it's Cannavale, -5 points. If it's Michael Rooker, -7 points. And then wrote, but either of those would have been better than some guy that didn't like Denzel. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
Who was there, right? Like, I feel like if he hadn't been one of his assistants, if he was just some guy who showed up out of nowhere, it would have worked better for me because it felt so hokey that it was like, dun, dun, dun. It was that guy we showed you at the beginning. And it's like, but who is this guy?
Right. And I wasn't clear, like, what was his role in Denzel's life? Was he...
He was another nurse.
Okay.
I think he was specifically involved in the machinery.
It just doesn't make any sense. Like, he did so much just to discredit him. Like, what? Mm-hmm. That's your revenge and then kill him? Like, just if you're going to do all this to, like, sneak into his home and just kill him while you're there, like, how many times you been there?
Right. Also, I'm confused. I thought that the murders were inspired by a fictional book.
I know.
That was very, like, this movie's based on a book. And I was like, wait, did you write a book about murders inspired by murders in a book? Because that's weird.
They kept saying true crime. They kept throwing that around.
Maybe it was a 100-year-old true crime book. Because remember, they were like, here's these two tiny pieces of paper. I recognize this publisher's logo.
Right,
and I was like, fuck this.
I was like, that's the Starbucks logo. What are you doing?
It looks exactly like the Starbucks logo.
Yeah, not to tear apart.
Let's tear this apart.
This whole series, and it's a whole book series, I'll get into it in a second in the Faxy segment, but there's a whole book series about Lincoln Rhyme, whose thing is, he just knows so much shit, right? Mm-hmm. He just, like, they give a speech at some point that, oh, he's studying different kinds of dirt and history and maps, and where he's just, like, Ken Jennings, but probably less problematic this week,
right.
of just absorbing information. And we are to believe that while working full-time as a detective in New York, constantly working, he had time to memorize everything. Now, as an alternate plan, why didn't you tell me that he learned all of that after he became a quadriplegic?
Right.
Easiest thing in the world. Like, oh, he can't move anymore, so he learned anything so he can be helped.
Right.
So he can help out more. That makes so much more sense than what we're actually doing here.
Exactly. It was just way too much of just like, oh, he's just a big brain. And, you know, this is what he did in his spare time. Yeah, there's no way. Like, who?
Also, sorry to cut you off. Speaking of Ken Jennings, like, I just... This whole I'm a quadriplegic, so I better kill myself plotline, I just don't need that. I just don't need that. And, like, I'm not paralyzed, so I don't know what it's like, but I just feel like it's such a, like, unpleasant, toxic story that they don't actually deal with in any meaningful way. They just, like, put it in there to, like, tell you, like, this guy's really messed up, right? Which maybe explains some of his horrifying behavior towards Angelina Jolie, but it just makes me feel icky.
It was unnecessary.
Yeah.
The whole plot line.
I think it's interesting to have your detective be quadriplegic and have to have somebody do their legwork. It's like an extreme version of the Nero Wolf situation.
Right.
But, like, that's interesting. I just think the whole piece of it where he doesn't want to live anymore because he's might have a seizure that would leave him in a vegetative state, write your living will.
Yeah, yeah.
Such
yeah.
that after that seizure happens, right. they withdraw care. This is pretty simple.
Yeah, the serial killer is the fun part of this movie. Because right. when it's not that, it's like, this charismatic man is going to commit suicide very soon.
Right.
Like, come on, give us a break.
It just,
this movie should be called Give Us a Break.
Yeah, it was an unnecessary part of it. It was an unnecessary plot point because it brought nothing. Nothing at right. all. Nothing.
At the end, he's just like, never mind.
And now I've got this young, hot thing's attention. I think I'm gonna live. Like,
yeah, are they together at the
no,
end?
So,
it's gross.
Here's the thing. I thank God Denzel has his deal with his wife.
Right,
where he
right.
won't kiss white women. Because when they started flirting, I was like, I hate this. Mm. I hate it. Oh, get me out of this room, Felix. Because he is such a creep to her. Why is she responding? Like, I understand he looks like Denzel Washington.
But still.
So, like, but beyond that, why is she responding to him when he's like, hey, baby, go cut off this corpse's hands? What?
Which, okay, I promise I'm about to do the facts and segment. Yes, all of that. But also, I will give you a few minutes of everyone respects Denzel, and he says that one person should go in and do it first because she notices things, intuition, fine. Mm. 5 minutes. When that gets to, hi, I know this isn't your training at all, but we need you to cut apart a body that has not been even looked at by anybody right. else in the crime scene. It's like, shut the, come on.
Right.
Come on. Isn't detective fiction supposed to be, you know, all like immersed in the world of procedurals and true to life, but with outlandish circumstances? Like, no one is ever going to start sawing legs off to uncuff a victim because, I don't know, the police will step over the murder clue pile. Like, ugh.
Yeah, and that's, yeah. Okay, get to the
I
facts.
I just took four more points.
Yeah.
Anyway, The Bone Collector. It was released November 5th of 1999, the 30th number one film of the year. Won its opening weekend with $16.7 million. I said last week I was a little surprised this was a number one movie in America. It did win easily because the rest of the top of the chart had really effectively split the audience. The runner-up was the second weekend of the House on Haunted Hill remake. $7.7 million. There were two new releases after that. Rom-com The Bachelor with Bad Robin. Chris O'Donnell?
Chris O'Donnell.
Not you, Robin.
I thought you were like, shame on you,
yeah,
Robin.
I thought that's what he was
not
doing.
Recognizing the name of The Bachelor. And I was like, I'm sorry.
No, it's, I can't remember. We said his name a month ago. I can't remember that guy's name week to week.
You don't need to remember his name. It's not the 90s anymore.
Right. That was in third with $7.4 million. The Insider, Michael Mann's The Insider, debuted in fourth with $6.7 million. So House on Haunted Hill, Bachelor, and The Insider pulled away various, you know, demographics. And Bone Collector was the kind of shrug compromise movie of the weekend. Just a 1 week number one movie in America, falling to second place in its sophomore weekend behind Pokemon the First Movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back. Can't wait to draw that one, which made a surprising $31 million in its debut frame. That is big for independent animation. Bone Collector, 7 weeks in the top 10, $66.5 million, 34th overall for 1999. The book is by a mystery writer named Jeffrey Deaver. His longest running series is about this character. Detective Lincoln Rhyme begins with The Bone Collector. This is essentially the launch of that franchise. As far as I can tell, this is the only film adaptation of anything by this writer. There was, however, a Bone Collector TV series yeah. on network television, like, just last year.
Yeah, I think it's called Lincoln or something.
It was called Lincoln Rhyme, Hunt for the Bone Collector on NBC, debuted January 10th of 2020, ran for 10 episodes. Literally no one noticed.
Right.
The last time that I was in someone's house before the world ended, The Bone Collector was on TV. And I said, what is this? And it was Abby Feuder, and she said, this is called The Bone Collector. I think it's like that movie with Denzel Washington. And I was like, well, that is a black man quadriplegic. I think that is a fair assumption.
Also, the name The Bone Collector.
Right, that helps.
Well, also, I gotta say, watching this movie, especially because I was becoming increasingly annoyed with it, I was at a very punchy place, and I just kept saying those words. Like, anytime somebody appeared who was clearly going to get murdered, I was like, oh, those bones are about to get collected.
That's funny, because I was in a whole the bone collector kind of mood, because I can't. For the longest time, I would say the lovely bones is the only way I could say that movie title. So this is what I was doing. The lovely not winter bones too, collector.
Not to be too literal. Did he collect bones?
No!
There were a few bones around. Right. Like bones factored into clues. But I assume at some point we would be introduced to his vast collection of bones.
I was just waiting for like there to be like this whole like big bucket or something.
I got this one at a convention in Minneapolis.
Oh, nice and cataloged and tagged properly, and he's like showing them off in a case.
The Bone Collector series was canceled after 10 episodes due to just extreme apathy on the part of the viewing public. The director of this film is Philip Noyce.
Noyce!
Like your Jake Peralta saying nice. Philip Noyce, who has had a very consistent 40-year career.
Dad
without,
movies.
Again, kind of with dad movies. Not exclusively. He's Australian. He did a few features in Australia beginning in 1978 and has been working ever since. Dead Calm. That's the...
Oh, like, Billy Zane!
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah. Piece,
right?
That's actually good, right?
It's really good, yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of a quiet burn, but it's good. Billy Zane at his most zaniest.
I remember being surprised how good it was.
Yeah.
A big run of dad movies, including Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, The Saint, a pivot to this had Oscar buzz type stuff like Rabbit Proof Fence and The Quiet American. He worked with Angelina again on Salt, trying out action.
Oh, I love that movie.
And The Giver. Remember how they adapted The Giver and no one went? That was also Philip Noyce.
I do remember they filmed that in Cape Town while I lived there. Meryl Streep was in town when Mandela died, and she talked about it on the radio.
Did you talk to her about being born in the same hospital?
No, I've never met her. But if I ever... I am the kind of person who, if I meet famous people, I will try to ignore them as much as possible. But if I ever like was at brunch and Meryl Streep was there, I'd have to walk over and be like, Overlook Hospital, what?
I know one person who said hello to Meryl Streep, and like it's a closer connection than you think. She was working at a summer camp, and one of Meryl Streep's children was at the summer camp.
Oh wow!
And like on pickup day, she was like hello, and Meryl Streep politely said hello and walked away, which is frankly exactly what you want. Like you want her to acknowledge you politely, but not give you any time because it's Meryl Streep. Right. She doesn't have time for you.
Exactly. What am I going to talk to Meryl Streep about?
Yeah.
Overlook Hospital.
Right. About this film, though, about The Bone Collector, what's his name again? Philip Noyce. Well, here's what he, quoting IMDb trivia directly, Philip Noyce is not a big fan of his work on this film. In the wake of Seven, every studio wanted a copycat serial killer film on their books. He felt that he was just part of the assembly line by signing on to this film, knowing full well that he would never be able to match David Fincher's achievement.
Well, at least he knew.
So,
and Denzel did this because he regretted not doing Seven.
Right, exactly. And they get the same...
probably played in.
And they get the freak out guy. They bring Lust in to be the killer.
Oh, that's who that is!
That was the next fact, and when Camila started saying this, I was like, oh, Robin isn't going to have noticed, and we'll get to hear her react. Yeah, I didn't even write down the actor's name. I'm sorry, guy.
I know.
You shouldn't have been the killer.
He's always been the freak-out guy to me, because everything I've seen him in, there's a moment where he just freaks the fuck out. Like, have you ever seen Very Bad Things?
I have.
He's one of those dudes, and he loses his shit.
Yeah, if we're talking around it for the listener, in Seven, the guy that has to kill the girl with Lust, with the dick knife, you know, the dick knife, the guy who had to wear the dick knife, is the bad guy, the secret bad guy in Bone Collector, making it even more clear that they're like, remember Seven? Come see this movie.
I'm like, Leland Orser.
There you go.
Oh, Leland.
Oh, he looks... steely in his IMDb picture.
Sure does. He looks like a corrupt mayor.
Oh.
Also, can we talk about Queen Latifah being in this movie? What? I assume Denzel Washington called her personally and was like, want to come hang out? And she was like, sure.
Right. Or I was just kind of thinking it was like this is her leap into acting. Like, this was probably, I didn't look it up, but like, was this one of her first roles, like acting roles?
This is maybe in film. I mean, like, Living Single had been on for years at right, this point,
yeah.
Right?
That's what I meant, like film.
And I guess it worked. I mean, she got Oscar nominated 2 years later.
Right.
But I just feel like she is way too famous, likable, attractive, everything to be in this incredibly thankless nurse role.
Yeah. Like, her presence is very distracting. Like, yes. I just keep thinking, like, so you guys brought Queen Latifah in here just to react to radio, like to the audio, like this, she's sitting there, she's doing her puzzles and reacting. Like, that's, I feel like that's a waste.
I don't know. She had been in a bunch of movies.
Solve anything? Because at one point he's like, oh, my nurse is the puzzle queen.
Yeah, I think she helped out with the Starbucks logo. She was like, doesn't that look like a face?
Yeah. Jungle Fever, House Party 2, Juice, My Life, Set It Off, Hoodlums, Fear, and Living Out Loud all preceded Bone Collector for Queen Latifah.
I think if anything, though, this is probably the first one that was outside of that stereotype role that she was playing before, like all those other things before that.
And not like specifically directed at Black audiences.
Right.
Well, I wonder, I did see at some point that was a male character in the book. I wonder if Denzel didn't say like, hey, cast a second Black person, please.
Yeah, probably.
Black women exist.
Right, yeah.
Right. Maybe it came down to that. She was badly underused. But yeah, there were a lot of people who, like you mentioned, Ed O'Neill. And speaking of, that's my final fact. Ed O'Neill's family appears at the Christmas party, or his character's family shows up at the Christmas party. And it is a red-haired wife, blonde daughter, and dark-haired son, deliberately to mirror the Married with Children cast. Cute.
Sure. Cute.
That was a lot of trouble for something that just... probably most people were like, didn't notice.
If you were working on this movie, you would find ways to make your own fun so that you didn't hate yourself forever.
Yeah, it's bad. I
don't want to just like completely drag on it. Like, there are things that do work. In particular, I thought Angelina Jolie is great in this.
Oh god,
like, really? Her accent is trouble.
Her accent makes me want to scream. I'm like, oh, we're going to do like, this for the next 2 hours, huh?
Yeah, okay. But not the whole 2 hours. Don't worry.
It's a come and go accent. Come and go accent.
And extremely confusing wig choices. But this is a rare movie where Angelina Jolie is vulnerable, and I believe it. Like, I think that Angelina Jolie doesn't work for me as a movie star as well as she works for a lot of people. And I think for me, it's because she's just too beautiful and sexy and cool. And so if she's not playing like Lara Croft, it's like, well, you don't seem like a real person.
Yeah.
This is a movie where she seemed like a real person to me, which was very nice.
That's funny, because I was thinking, like, Angelina Jolie is unbelievable as a commoner. Like, I don't, I can't sit here and watch her and think, like, oh, yeah, she's a cop, a beat cop. Yeah, okay. And then they just, like, throw the whole thing in there about, oh, she used to be a model. That was kind of unnecessary. I mean,
the whole dead dad backstory wasn't necessary. And also, the picture that they showed of her and her dead dad, he looked like he was 5 years older than her. And I was convinced at first that it was her dead husband.
There are so many places where that character, well, in the whole movie, but where that character too is like given a little extra bit of story business that's like, yeah, just drawing this shit out doesn't make it better. Like, I mean, she had the dead dad thing. She also had the, I was gonna be a cop, but something, something, now I just want to work with kids. I don't want to be a real cop, even though I'm good at it. It's like, do you think this counts as developing the character? Like, we don't care. We don't, like, we're here for them to solve the mystery, and then we can go home.
Like, not to get too deep into the politics of policing, but because we ask police officers to be social workers, the fact that she wants to do the social worker side of policing is not a character flaw.
Man, do I hate inter-police power struggles. Oh. Like, it works in The Departed. Most of the time, it's like, this movie is not about various levels of cop not getting along. That's not the point of this thing. We know for a fact that it isn't going to be like, oh, we watched a movie about a whole mystery and then the mystery didn't get solved because Michael Rooker was mean. Like, that's not where it's going. So that subplot is just a literal distraction from what's going on. Why?
Maybe it was just trying to throw you off. Because for a minute, I was starting to believe that maybe Michael Rooker was the killer, but
it's hard to say who I would have thought, but I believe in my heart I would have thought it was Michael Rooker and that Ed O'Neill was the red herring.
Right.
I never thought it was Ed O'Neill. Like, I mean,
does that character exist?
Right. I didn't think it was him, but I was questioning the entire time, why is Ed O'Neill here? Why is he here? What is his purpose?
I think you need a character there to, like, be the higher up that is protecting, you know, Lincoln Rhymes, I do whatever the fuck I want status. Mm. But it doesn't need to be Ed O'Neill and get, you know, significant.
Was he really protecting him, though? Like, were there any? I mean, I know they kind of were protecting Jolie towards the end, him and Louise Guzman or whatever. But
no,
I love him.
Yeah. No complaints there.
Yes. And he just his little frustrations. Just cute.
Yeah. The cast is good. Chugs along. Other than those distractions, it's like, yeah, we got a mystery. It's clues. It's, you know, sure. But man, there's so many like pointless or frustrating or things that don't work. It looks bad. It's like,
there's
like
this one scene where they are walking in the street and it was clearly very sunny, but they needed it to be dark and gritty. And so they did like halfway day for night, where they color toned the whole thing so that it would look like a cloudy day, but it just checked the settings. I was like, did I mess up my TV?
I thought my brain had stopped working. I was like, is this a COVID symptom that I haven't heard of? Is this how it starts? That just suddenly your eyes get the color wrong? That scene, it looks like there's an eclipse. Like, what happened?
I wrote down, Mike Stanwyck is the name of the color timer. I wrote his name down in my notebook because I was so upset about
that. Shame on you, Mike. Shame on you. Yeah, I saw this movie back in 2000, I'm assuming, or 2001, and I remember nothing from it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. This was like brand new. It's like completely unremarkable. I just remember walking away like, huh. And it's basically kind of the same where I am now.
I think if I caught this in a better mood, I would have like enjoyed it more. You know, like, it's fine.
But it's not.
Fair point.
Because I keep trying to, like, on paper, like, it seems like I feel like if I was, like, up in the woods somewhere or like, you know, on vacation and I only had one channel and this was playing on it and I wanted to watch a movie, I'd be like, oh, sure, this seems like a good way to spend 2 hours. But that's probably the only situation where...
Yeah, the natural enemy of this movie is sports. If you've got two channels coming in and Bone Collector's on one and a game of any kind is on the other one, it's like
golf.
Okay, not golf. All of this said, I will take 100 of these, especially for the purposes of this podcast, but for something to watch, if it was a normal world and I was going to the movie screenings that appear, you know, without really choosing, I'll take 100 of these before I take a Transformers or a Chronicle or, you know, The Time Machine, you know, just being a AARP movie for grownups is... that's only a thing for awards nerds and on the This Had Oscar Buzz podcast, but it pops into my head once every 3 days because it's so hilarious. That's a real movie awards show, the AARP Movies for Grownups Awards.
What?
Yes, I like this in I'm that almost regard. There. I don't hate it, but
there's just so much is just so wrong with it. And I mean, I don't know, like, there was a time period where I was just obsessed with Angelina Jolie, which I'm assuming, like, you know, 95% of the population was as well. And, you know, we all bought into it. But I guess there was at no point did we ever stop to question, is she actually good? Like, is
she? Sometimes, no.
No.
She's definitely bad sometimes. I thought she was good here, aside from the accent and the wigs, which aren't her fault.
I thought she was good here. I thought the cast was good. I think it has a good cast.
I think it's just kind of, for me, Angelina, for the most part, she's always kind of the same character. But, you know, it is fine, I guess, you know, when you place her in those certain roles like, you know, Gia or Foxfire or, you know, Laura Croft and Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Yes, that absolutely works. But like there was a movie where they were trying to do like a rom-com with her, Life or something like it, I think. They put her in a blonde wig and like she was like this highfalutin, like hoity-toity newscaster or something. I don't know.
Well, that sounds awful.
It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. And I don't know what happened to her these days. I guess she's moved on to directing.
She's got 45 children.
She's directing.
Yeah, she has 45 children and she's trying to direct. And she's not very good. Like, she could be. She's one of those actors turned directors that it's like, there's a path for you to be good, but you're not yet.
Right. Mm.
To the point where the only one of her movies I can remember is Unbroken, and that was mostly just long.
Unbroken.
I never saw any of them.
Yeah. It was also in the IMDb trivia that she did film multiple nude scenes for this movie, but Philip Noyce felt that they felt out of place and, you know, felt forced, so he cut them all out.
Like with the Bobby romance, Cannavale? Too?
Hmm?
Like, why? Where were why were there nude scenes question. Filmed? One. Two. Like, so those would have been forced, yes, but also this fucking love, this romance they were trying to push on us, that wasn't forced. Noyce, that wasn't...
So, I imagine, look, it's a cop movie. There's an attractive woman. I assume she would have like thought a lot in the shower. Like, that's generally how you get there.
Right, right.
Like, Will Smith did it in iRobot. That's why we have Will Smith's butt as part of the cultural record.
I'm in favor of people thinking in the shower.
Yeah, I'm sure it felt like, oh, you just inserted a nude scene to get her naked. Yeah, we're also trying to sell some tickets here. Like, come on.
It would have been a whole like, well, the movie's just but you do get to see Angie's boobs.
Really? Did anyone want to see Original Sin? No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and Jolie and Antonio Banderas have sex?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why I bought the ticket. Yeah.
Right. Well, on that base.
What the hell is that?
Wait. Let me narrate this. We've done a lot of episodes from home, and this is the first. Robin did not call over the cat in any way. The cat has just entered the frame right up against the camera, right up against the webcam. Is it hovering over the screen?
Right.
She's coming from behind.
It's like Snoopy when he's in vulture mode, like on top of his. Apparently, your cat has some strong feelings about the bone collector, and we are not.
They did whole sci-fi movies this way in the 50s. Just put the cat really close to the camera. You go stand over there and be like, oh my God, it's a giant cat. It's a whole movie. Oh, that was better than The Bone Collector. Let's rate it. Camila.
49. I deducted 10 points for the Christmas party.
Totally fair. Still higher than I thought, but Robin?
Do you have the previous scores up?
Yes.
What did I give Glass?
That's a good frame of reference. Glass, 38.
Okay, I said two more than Glass or 40.
Oh, wow. Oh, look at that.
And that's it. There you go. 40.
Yeah, 37. I was out of 41, and then in the middle of, I meant it, in the middle of one of those rants earlier in the episode, I was like, you know what? No. 37. That's a 42 average. 42 for the Bone Collector, which probably Bone Collector should be happy with a 42.
Oh, yeah.
Right. That seems generous. I think it's all of us being like, well, at the end of the day, like,
it's Denzel.
The lens cap was off. Right.
Right.
Denzel showed up to work. Like, kudos to him for getting paid whatever he got paid to just lay down for 2 hours. I,
25 points are Denzel telling me facts. <It's> like, there used to be an old oyster thing down by the docks. Like, yes, go on. Two, the sadly untouched bingo card. Does one of you have a crush on Denzel?
No.
I mean, I don't feel eligible to have a crush on Denzel.
Right, there's the rule.
Like, if you had caught me
from my whiteness, I'm just not worthy.
If you had caught me 15 years ago, it would have been Angelina, but
right,
no mas. Wait, is there a dream? There's a dream sequence at the very beginning. Denzel has a dream about
that him remembering his injury? Is that a dream?
No, because when he looks at the body, it's his face.
Oh yeah,
that's right. I was like, they better explain this. They didn't.
They don't.
But Camille explained it for the movie. It's a dream sequence, and we get to cross that off of the bingo card. Anything else? Did anyone catch a pickup truck?
No, I didn't see one. Is anybody eating anything? I know Denzel does some drinking.
He's drinking from his straw all the right. time. I assume there's some kind of nutritional liquid in there.
That's not what I meant, though.
Okay.
There was no dog. That was... There was a falcon. Why? If that falcon had ended up being a metaphor for death, I would have left. But, you know. So we're only crossing off dream sequence very early on this particular bingo card. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. And now, to add to our opinions on Wonder Woman 1984, here's Camila.
What in the entire fuck? I was... I was so angry with it. Like, it started off like bad, but I was like, but it's fun. Okay. It's like, I see the problems here, you know, but we're having fun. But then it just hit like a wall. Boom. No mas. The fun is no longer to be had. And it just like went tumbling down the road, just down the hill. And it's like, this is bullshit. Like the whole, I don't even remember specifically what it was. It just like pushed me over the edge. Like, I guess the whole Pedro's storyline, and then the way, like, the whole Diana's golden suit thing, and it's just, and then, oh god, yeah, the fucking Steve thing, fuck! Like, 40 years? You gotta do this for 40 years? It doesn't make sense to me how she would be pining like this for him for this long, and I'm pretty sure you talked about it last week, but yeah, that's like, I think that's probably my biggest problem, is that we have this superhero, a female superhero, and she's still wrapped up in some dude. Like, and I know we kind of have it with Captain America as well, but at least with Captain, he was asleep for a lot of those years after Peggy was dead or whatever. And so it's like, it kind of just happened yesterday to him. But Diana, like, you've come across a lot of people in the past 40 years, and... Mm-hmm. I don't buy it. I don't like it. I don't like that it's such a big part of her story. Like, why this love interest needs to be such a big thing. Like, I actually woke up the next day still kind of angry about it. And I guess it's just because of because Wonder Woman was such a big deal to me when I was a little kid, and you know, still kind of is. And then I got, when they talk about, what is it, Artemis, or I don't know, and they show her eyes, I started to think, hey, Linda Carter hasn't been around in any of these movies. I'm like, what? What's that about? And then...
So was that satisfying at all to you?
It was. Like, okay. I got like a, ooh, hi, hey. But then she started to talk, and I don't remember her voice being that high. Like, it seemed weird. Like, her voice seemed weird.
I don't remember her voice being high either. Right.
It seemed like she opened her mouth and was like a 12-year-old girl was talking. But yeah. But the male makeover montage was fun.
That was the part where I was like, there is one part of this movie that is just purely delightful.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think it's especially because Chris Pine is a noted fashion adventurer.
Oh, is he?
He's a shorts enthusiast, Chris Pine.
Shorts and...
I'll send you some pics.
Thanks. But and I did find the scene where Pedro is doing the television. And Diana comes in on him. That's when that's him stripping in the wind. That's where that gift comes from.
Oh,
and
good.
Again,
I'm glad that we now know what you're talking about.
And that was worth it for me also. Okay. And it's like, and I don't understand the plot is so fucking convoluted. The wishing dumb. Stone. Okay. I just, basically I'm pissed off about the whole thing. And I'm pretty sure this is where I get off. I'm done. I can't do this. I'm not playing this game with you anymore, DC. We're done here.
Well, I'm in a different position because I liked it, but to be balanced, I will say that while I liked it on the DC curve, you know, I liked it like I liked Shazam and thought that Aquaman was fine. Mm. Not like I like Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman remains the only exception in the DC extended universe. That's the only one in this series so far that was like, wow, you made a really good movie. And lest we forget, I very deliberately did not make much of it at the time because I think Wonder Woman is a great movie. It doesn't really matter. But the first one absolutely did not stick the landing either.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even that one also fell apart. It just fell apart much later than this one. They don't really know how to make movies, make superhero movies over there. But sometimes it's fun, and like I think I go into it going like, oh, I hope this is fun. And that if you walk into Shazam like that, you're like, oh, cute. Oh, and, you know, it's
like I have no qualms with Shazam, but you know, it's just I don't know. It's just it's too precious to me. The source material is just too precious, and I'm taking it a little bit more personally than I need to.
Well, I'm sorry.
So you would say don't watch it. I mean, would you tell people no?
It would be more like, you know, with some caveats. It's like, you can watch it, but like bring your bar down a little bit, like for what you're about to experience. Because like it's a superhero movie. Like at the end of the day, like it's a superhero movie. If that's your jam, then yeah, go ahead. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And there's a lot, like Pedro Pascal chews up the scenery, and it's also kind of worth it. Watch him like lose his shit.
Yeah, he is great. I know that Robin hated the character so much that you may now hate Pedro Pascal, but
I told Sean the morning that I watched it, I was like, well, I haven't really watched The Mandalorian, but I now hate The Mandalorian.
Is he The Mandalorian?
He is.
He's The Mandalorian. He's so good. And it is so different from this part that I'm like, oh, you're one of those I can do anything guys. Because it is the complete opposite type of this character.
Yeah, like I think the only reference I really had for him was an episode of Buffy. And
God, I always forget that he's that guy.
And Game of Thrones. So I don't.
He's also got the Great Wall with Matt Damon and a bunch of actual Chinese people.
Nope, didn't see
that movie. If there were not white people in that movie, that would be a cult classic.
So to see him
Did we veto that? No, we vetoed Last Samurai. Yeah, close.
So yeah, to see him in this role, it was like, oh wow, he could do like this like comedy. I didn't know he had the comedic chops on him. But yeah, I mean, I'm totally down with like looking up more of Pedro's work. I probably am still not going to watch The Mandalorian though.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen season two yet. I've seen season one and it's great. And a lot of people are like, oh, if you thought season one was great.
I get it. I know why people like it, but it's not my thing.
Yeah. Like I am, Timothy Olyphant is in an episode and I haven't watched that yet. So there's not much that's going to.
Is this that thing where I'm like, yay, Westerns, and you're both like, Westerns?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely better than a lot of Star Wars movies. And like, I saw Monster Hunter, like the Paul W.S. Anderson, like attempts to start another Resident Evil franchise thing just because it was playing at the drive-in. And all I could think in this, you know, probably $100 million movie was every individual episode of The Mandalorian is better than this. Wow. Like that's more of an attack on Monster Hunter, but there's a whole lot of sci-fi movies that are nowhere near as good as any single episode of Mandalorian. Anyway, we're not telling you anything new by me, another 35-year-old white man enjoying The Mandalorian.
I'm glad those of you who are enjoying The Mandalorian are enjoying it.
Yes.
You deserve it.
Camila,
happiness.
Did you see anything you do approve of?
Not a movie. I just finished binge watching Killing Eve, which amazing. I highly, highly recommend that movie about a female assassin and a woman played by Sandra Oh, who hunts her and gets tangled up in all this nonsense. She's like a normal everyday woman, but she ends up in this mess of hunting this assassin, female assassin, played by Jodie Comer. And the soundtrack is fucking beautiful. Like it's like this, like a 60s French pop or something. I don't know. But and also costume design. Oh my God.
The costumes in the show are unreal. The thing about that show, speaking of Foxfire, is that I went in believing in my heart that Sandra Oh and the assassin were going to fuck. And then they spend all of the episodes being like, well, they really want to fuck.
Right.
But they don't ever fuck. So once I realized that they were never going to fuck, I was like, I'm out.
So they keep like inching closer and closer
like
to it.
Want to
right?
Just do it. Yeah. Just do it.
It's they're moving very slowly towards that. So
if they ever get there, then I'll watch again.
But I would highly recommend it for those who don't care whether or not you know, who aren't dissuaded by Sandra Oh and Jodie Comer fucking or not.
Who would be dissuaded by them actually fucking? I guess hateful people.
I think those people probably wouldn't even be interested in it at all. Yeah, I don't know who this Jodie Comer is. Like, I've never seen her in anything else before, but she is great. Like,
I think she was kind of new when they cast her in that show, right?
Maybe. I took a quick peek at her IMDb, and nothing came across. Like, I guess she is in one of the newer Star Wars movies. It's nothing. None of it meant anything to me.
Robin, see anything good?
Yeah, I watched Sylvie's Love on Amazon Prime. And That is exact, like, that my version of a Western is like two people fall in love and wear pretty clothes and look at each other lovingly. And so, like, this is exactly the kind of movie that I'm going to just love and gush over. The one thing about it that kind of held me up is that the characters make really indefensible emotional choices. Mm. And it got me thinking, I was like, is this like, is he writing, like, I'm pretty sure the same person wrote and directed it. So I was like, is he telling the story of his mother or someone real? Mm. Like, why are these, the choices never feel honest, which is a shame because that movie is so pretty. So pretty. And it has people looking at each other like they really love each other, which is all I really want out of a movie. And I also watched all of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And mm-hmm. I have complicated thoughts about putting a camera in front of a play.
Dude.
Like, that's, they barely tried to make a movie. They were like, let's make a play with a camera in front
of it. I started to watch it and like 15 minutes in, maybe I was like, I can't do this. I don't, like, it wasn't landing with me.
I mean, like, movies and live theater are not the same thing.
Right.
And then I went into this whole, like, well, we don't have live theater this year. I think I enjoyed the movie more than I would have because I haven't seen any live theater this year. But then there's the whole thing of like, well, live theater is inaccessible, blah, 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 blah. Roundabout thinky, not properly enjoying the movie. I still think that Chadwick was awesome. Again, another movie where I'm like, you're very pretty costumes. The set looks really cool. The one set. But like, it is a play with a camera in front of it. So if that's not for you, I don't necessarily recommend it, even though I really respect what is going on. If that makes sense. I both feel like I'm gushing about it and panning it at the same time.
No, I mean, I get what you're saying because I think that's probably where I would land on it too. And I think I also probably need to find a better, under better circumstances to watch it, because it was like Dan and I had settled in for a movie for the evening and we turned it on. It's like, this isn't.
You accidentally walked into a play.
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, sorry, with our popcorn and and Twizzlers.
Well, then definitely don't watch that Boys in the Band on Netflix that they did earlier this year, which is the much more egregious version of just putting it. Like, that's all the way to the cliche where it's just the play, but we put in five establishing shots of the characters walking down the street to get to the place where the play happens.
Oh, geez.
She does go outside at one point.
Yes, yes. But Chadwick should win that Oscar.
Yeah. I don't know if he's going to. I feel like the movie is... It's going to be a Glenn Close and the wife situation where people are like, well, I didn't really like the movie.
I think most people like it, right?
Oh, I do not. It is very hard to keep up with what the consensus is on any movie these days.
I feel like
when you're neither reading reviews nor talking to human beings.
Right. Correct. Yeah. And you follow a certain amount of like the same people, like you're living in this void on social media of just like everybody who kind of thinks or like you anyway. So
right.
It's
and
like you
also,
don't really
like just the social media opinion cycle moves so fast, right? And gets so distracted by things like Tanya Roberts being dead or undead or Ken Jennings being problematic, et cetera.
I just don't like his face. I don't care what he's done or not done. He's
Ken Jennings?
Yeah.
Okay, for a second I thought you meant Chadwick Boseman. And I
no.
Was like,
ma'am.
Meet me outside.
Ma'am.
So Sylvie's Love, yes. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, not an actual endorsement.
No, And Sylvie's Love also, I'm like, if you don't like, if you're not the kind of person who loves these gauzy romances, then you have no reason to watch that movie. But if you do love gauzy romances, run, don't walk.
And also don't watch the trailer first. Like, I was going to watch it the other night, but the trailer is like, I feel like I just watched the movie. Like, the trailer.
Oh,
just...
you did. Yeah. Because, like, it is very much like, and then they do this confusing choice. And then they do this. But they love each other, and so I don't know.
I have been so all over the place. Quick hits. Logan's Run isn't great, but boy, do I miss sci-fi movies making bold design choices. Yeah, I had a weird run at the end of the year. The Marx Brothers, Horse Feathers. arbitrarily started watching that on New Year's Eve, and then I found out lots of people have we watch Marx Brothers movies on New Year's Eve tradition.
I think that comes from TV. I think they used to show Marx Brothers movies on, like, do marathons of Marx Brothers movies on some cable channel.
Yeah, that scans. I always think of the Twilight Zone as the New Year's Eve day marathon.
I always think of the Honeymooners.
Yeah, I mean, that the Twilight Zone is new to me. We just found that out. We watched it on New Year's Eve and then on New Year's Day. Like, not Twilight Zone is new to me, but the marathon part of it. And I was delighted.
Man, is it easy to be like, have I been here for 5 hours? Like, much more so than with, like, something thoughtful that you have to binge. Like, you just lay on the couch, and every 20 minutes, someone's in an unusual situation and doesn't believe it, but then they accept it and learn a nice lesson, and then it repeats again. It's great. On New Year's Day, I rewatched Hereditary. Mary Beth had not seen it, did not know what she was getting into.
Oh,
was
God.
Mad at me afterwards.
Yeah, you should warn her.
She was enthusiastic about it. She bought me that Blu-ray like some birthday or Christmas ago because she knew I liked it and we hadn't watched it. And she was like, oh, yeah, great. And I was like, do I tell her? Do I tell her?
Shame on you.
I know. It's still so good. Like, again, not breaking any ground here, but like on a second viewing when I know what's coming. And more importantly, when I can just pay attention to Toni Collette the whole way. Holy shit, that performance is one of the best performances in horror history, and how I feel about horror.
Yeah, she acts her ass off. Like, I give it to her, man, for that entire thing. Like, I wasn't a big fan of the movie as a whole, but Toni Collette.
I like the movie a lot. I do think some people overrate it a little bit. I think it really backloads its plot. That movie is like an hour and 40 minutes of what's happening and then 30 minutes of very rapid fire. Here's everything all at once. But it's really good and she's great. And finally, if I voted for awards today, which I won't, and it's weird that there's still several weeks before I do that, it would be Chadwick for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and I think it would be Vanessa Kirby for Pieces of a Woman, which is just out on Netflix as you're hearing this. Like, this is something that came out of nowhere for me. It's like a very weighty awards bait movie about a woman who had a home birth go awry. And I don't think it's very good. It is not a very good movie. Vanessa Kirby, who I have not given more than a few seconds thought to previously in my life, is unbelievably good. Is just a powerhouse in incredibly difficult stuff for half of the movie, and then this really restrained, like, fuck everybody, my feelings in life are my own, you know, distant part for the second half of the movie. She's so good that it makes, you know, me recommend a movie that doesn't have a lot going on, including a terrible performance by Shia LaBeouf. And I know he got canceled anyway. Sometimes it's nice when someone turns out to be a shithead and then the next thing you see them in, you're like, and you kind of suck too. So it's not a great movie. She is unbelievable. And I barely knew who she was going into this movie. I had to be like, oh, right, Hobbs and Shaw. Like, that's all I have to hang her existence on before this.
She was in a Mission really Impossible good. And was briefly connected romantically, allegedly, to Tom Cruise and was the first of several Tom Cruise girlfriends who are younger than me, which I always found deeply upsetting because I remember in third grade, my friend Rachel Vassar saying, I'm going to marry Tom Cruise. And I was like, he's in his 30s. He is too old for us. Apparently not.
No.
The patriarchy had other words to say. I also want to say that when Sean told me that Vanessa Kirby has Oscar buzz, I said, I'll believe it when I see it. So I'm putting that on record with all of you that I refuse to believe that Vanessa Kirby will get an Oscar nomination, much less an actual statue. Perhaps I will eat those words.
In everything I've seen, she's in the top five. Like all of the predict. I mean, it's early. Not actually early. It's in fact late. But this year it's early. It could fade, but yeah. You know.
I feel the same way about it that I felt about when people are saying Taron Egerton would get a nomination for Rocket Man. It's like, nope.
Nope, that's not a thing.
They are too snobby for that.
They might be. Did he? They might not be. We'll find out. When do nominations even come
February.
Out?
I think February.
My nominating period begins like a week into February, which is, I think, 2.5 months late. Hey, did you notice it's a weird year? It is. Let's draw a movie. It's just nothing but joy. We all have vetoes. If it lands on something terrible, we don't have to care. But it's probably going to land on something good because we're being positive. And Toni has been guiding us through this remarkable streak of puzzles. Wait, what did I say? I haven't seen it yet. What did I say? The name of this movie is The Clue to the Whereabouts of Toni Goldwyn.
Yes.
The name of the movie is Solo, A Star Wars Story. So he's alone somewhere. This prospect bores me, but I'm not going to veto it.
Yeah.
There's a veto is burning a hole in Robin's pocket.
Hang on. I mean, have we done any Star Wars yet?
No.
Okay.
That's the reason I'm not. All if right. we had done even one, I would be like,
I, the veto would have already left my body.
I thought to myself yesterday, huh, we've never done Star Wars. I didn't want it to be this one, but, you know, there's plenty to talk about. It's on Disney Plus, probably.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the first clue.
Let's see if I still feel this way. At the time, I felt like this is a clear step down from every other modern Star Wars movie, modern being the Disney era. This is a clear step below them. There are enough good sequences that it's fine. It's just overindulgent. It has far too many, like, and here's a bit of backstory. You know, it just was too much of that. But it's not bad.
I know I've tried to watch it twice and have fallen asleep both times. So we'll see. Third time's a charm.
I am excited to find out if I hate it more or less than Episode 9.
Which is...
Episode 9 of this podcast? No, you mean...
The Rise of Skywalker.
Have you not seen it?
No, I saw it because it was nominated for an Oscar.
What? Which? What? Which?
Visual effects, I think. Maybe sound. Not sure.
Did you know I watched... This is not part of You Can't Handle the Truth. This is just an anecdote. I watched King Kong from 2005 because it was at the drive-in. I do not know why. It just happened to be there. No one was watching. I don't know how it ended up there. That movie has 3 Oscars.
That makes sense.
The 2 sounds and visual effects.
Right.
But still.
It's like, yeah. It's just
a
like...
movie with 3 Oscars. Anyway, we're not talking about King Kong. We're talking about Solo, A Star Wars Story. And we're enthusiastic about it. The Bone Collector was released November 5th, 1999. What was the number one song in America when bones were really collected?
Living La Vida Loca.
No, close. Ricky Martin did have one that that winter.
Was it Ricky Martin or that I'm close? Or
it was not Ricky Martin, no.
This is too late in the year to be Britney, right?
It is not Britney. I would say that the Ricky Martin guest was certainly rhythmically closer than...
Jennifer Lopez.
No.
Enrique Iglesias.
We're looking for an older Hispanic gentleman.
Julio Carlos Iglesias.
Correct.
Carlos with Game of Love or Smooth?
It is Smooth, Santana.
Featuring Rob Thomas.
Do you believe, speaking of Tom Cruise, do you believe that it is because Tom Cruise had sex with Rob Thomas and the tabloids knew about it that the Church of Scientology said, you have to have a wife now. And that's when they had the auditions for a wife. And that's how he got married to Katie Holmes.
Wait a minute.
Definitely did not know that he had sex with Rob Thomas, but it makes so much sense.
Rob Thomas from Matchbox 20?
Yes.
This is for true?
That's the most unbelievable part. The Tom Cruise had sex with a man, and then they had wife auditions. That all I believe. That it was Rob Thomas from Matchbox 20.
Listen, he's got a little something. I don't know what it is.
That's nothing against Rob. You know, I could totally see that. But it's like Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
At any given point in time after 84. After 84, here's Tom Cruise and Rob Thomas.
This is probably him at his hottest, yes. Right?
Wow. I can't remember the rest of that question because I'm stuck. I'm stuck on the fact that, wow, is this common knowledge? How did I not know this?
I mean, look, I could be telephone gaming this within my own brain. Rob Thomas, don't sue me. Allegedly. But what I heard was...
Tom Cruise is the one you need to worry about.
Right. What I heard was that happened, and that's when the church was like, we need to get you in a nice straight relationship. And they had auditions, and all of these different stars showed up, including Scarlett Johansson. Scarlett Johansson was there, figured out what was going on, and then ran out of the Scientology building.
Deuces.
And Katie Holmes was the one that was like, this sounds good for my career. Fine.
Right. She was right.
She was correct. Anyway, Smooth. Santana. Wow. Still a jam. There's a 2008 Huffington Post article that says, Matchbox 20 frontman Rob Thomas has rubbished rumors that he had sex with Hollywood superstar Tom Cruise and is even more mortified he's been labeled a fellow Scientologist. I'm like... Yes, that is the correct order of things.
What?
Right.
Why would you be ashamed of having sex with Tom Cruise?
Right.
No, like, that's fine.
I'm totally like, yes, that's how you go up. I was like, what? A Scientologist? Like, after he reads the thing, I will sue.